Radio Gorgeous.
You must be mistaken. It couldn't have been. You couldn't have seen him yesterday. He's doing some deal up in Baltimore now. I hate it when he's away. You must be mistaken. I'm sure that you are. There's more than one car with stickers on, and lots of young guys wear corduroy pants, and I'd know if he hadn't gone. Take that look off your face.
With Marty Webb, who has just welcomed to Radio Gorgeous. You've just been over at Radio 2 with, is she a friend of yours, Gabby Roslin? You seem to be close.
Yes, well, I did her programme. It's actually Radio London, BBC yeah. Radio London. And I did her programme about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. And we just got on well because she loves the album Tell Me on a Sunday, which, of course, that I did with Andrew Lloyd Webber and Don Black. And she knows all the songs. She loves them. And so she found out I was doing Crazy Cox this next month. And so she invited me on. But, of course, I had to sing, which is always a bit scary when it's live and you just have to start singing.
So they got Lee Mead along, didn't they?
That's right, which was lovely. So we had Lee Mead and Andy Hayward. So it was nice. And Tanya Franks, who was gorgeous. And yes, and so they all sung Take That Look Off Your Face with me, which was fantastic. And I did Tell Me It's Andy and Ben. And then, of course, people say, oh, Lee, you and Marty sing a song together. And we go, what? We couldn't think of anything. It was like really... So we did an old sign called It Had To Be You, so which went down quite well. And it was lovely to sing with Lee because I love him. I think he's great.
So what are we going to expect at the Crazy Cox? You're doing three nights and you're doing sort of songs from all different shows, are you?
That's right, from the shows I've done and also the recordings I've made. Mm. And so it's a nice mixture of different types of songs. So it's not boring, I hope, for the audience, and certainly not boring for me. And a lot of them I haven't sung for a long time, so it's always a joy to revisit songs that you haven't sung for a long time. So I'm enjoying it.
So I'm dying to know, Marty, because you, I mean, you started off in the 60s and, you know, you made it in the 80s, really, famous, but I want to know where it all began, your career.
Well, I suppose it started really when I had the chance to go to stage school when I was 12, Ada Foster's in Golders Green, and And that's really when I first went there, that it was sort of, right, this is a job of work. This is what you're here for. You're training now to be, to go on the stage or
do whatever. Who encouraged you? Did you have good parents?
My mother and my father also. I mean, they were very good to me to send me to stage school.
Yeah.
And my mum actually took another job so that we, they had to pay for my fees, which, of course, I knew nothing about. Oh. Typical parents, that they don't tell you these things until years later, that you feel really guilty. That, oh, my God, you know, they went without to send me to this stage school.
So they sacrificed a lot.
Yes, yeah. They did, you know. And they were wonderful and so supportive all the time to me. And I started working more or less straight away, doing BBC schools programmes and things like that. And I was a lot of screaming teenagers. I did a lot of those on rock and roll shows and things like that. And I did my first actual show just before my 15th birthday, and that was a musical written by Vivian Ellis called Listen to the Wind. And I got to meet Vivian Ellis, and I was singing one day, and I always remember because he came up to me and he said, if you go on singing like that, you'll get somewhere one of these days. And it's lovely because years later when I met him, he always remembered me. And he said, I discovered Marty, which was lovely. You know, he was such a nice man.
Now, you're singing. I read this really interesting thing that Andrew Lloyd Webber said that he wanted to write for you because you had an untrained voice. But you said you went to drama school. So what was that about?
Oh, because we went to a stage school. So, of course, we did singing, dancing and acting. We did everything, which was great. So I sung with everybody else.
Does he mean it's not kind of operatic?
No, yes, because I haven't been trained. I haven't had a trained voice. It's I open my mouth and hope for the best. I still do it.
God.
And I love to sing, always love singing. And I always remember when I first met Andrew, when I went to see him about doing a Vita, actually. And I went to his flat, and we were talking about musicals forever. And then he said, I suppose I better hear you sing. And so I sung some songs from Evita, which he played for me, which was amazing, what can I say? And I asked him about one song, could I do this and that? And he went, oh, no, it's lovely. And then we finished, and he said, well, you sing in my keys. And I said, well, you write in mine. And so that was it. So it was one of those things that you just... And I never thought anything would come of it. I mean, I just thought what a lovely man he was and what his knowledge was so great on musicals and everything. And it was a joy just to have him play for me and sing.
So who wrote Take That Look Off Your Face, which went to number 3?
That was Andrew Lloyd Webber and Don Black for the album Tell Me on a Sunday, which, of course, got number 1. And I did that when I was in Evita. I'd only been there a week. And him and Don Black took me out for dinner. Mr. Chow's, I've never forgot that, in Knightsbridge, which
How
was so
glamorous.
Wonderful. Oh, it was wonderful. I thought, oh, I was so excited about being there. And then after over coffees, he said to me, well, Don and I have been working on an idea, and we wondered if you'd be interested in working on it with us. And I said, oh, yes. He said, well, it's an English girl in New York. He said, I know lots of girls, so does Don, that have gone to New York, you know, did a job and whatever. So he said, that's the premise. He said, as you said, we haven't written anything. I couldn't believe it. You're sitting there and you're thinking, my God, I thought it was enough to do Evita. I thought that was such a wonderful thing. And then this is offered to you, you know. And
writing a musical for you.
I know, and it was amazing because you very rarely get that chance to have music at that moment, you know, when somebody's actually writing it in front of you and you hear a lyric for the first time. And nobody else has done it, you know. And then to go in a studio with wonderful musicians like Rod Argent, John Heisman, Barbara Thompson. I mean, it was just amazing, absolutely amazing for me, an experience, really, that
was
so wonderful.
How would you describe your voice? Because I think it is different to other people's.
Well, somebody said to me it's an untrained coloratura, so that explains my range, I suppose.
And what does that range mean? What does that
mean? Well, I suppose you can do the low notes and you can do the very, very high twiddly bits, you know, all the twiddly bits.
Yeah.
I don't think you're very good as a plain soprano. I would say that's not the dead bit of the voice, I think, somewhere. But you're very good at all the other things. But it means that I can belt up higher than most people. I don't have a break in my voice as much. So that's why some songs I sing, they're different. They sound different to when other people do them.
And how did you learn to belt? Because, I mean, you can ruin your voice so easily.
Well, that, again, was luck and being with the right people. I tell you, I was in Stop the World, I Want to Get Off with Anthony Newley. We were in rehearsals and Anthony said, well, girls, he said, we're going to do this thing that they do in America. It's called belting, he said, and that's what they do. So he said, now I want you to do it. And a lot of the girls went, oh, no, I'm a trained singer, I don't do that. And I went, oh, I'll have a go. And anyway, so I just hit this note. And he said, that's it, Mark's got it. And that was it, really. And somehow, obviously, I did it right rather than straining my throat or whatever. And it stayed with me. And, of course, it saved me all my life, really, that I've had it. And thank God for him for opening a door. If you're lucky in life.
True. If you hadn't met him, you
wouldn't.
Exactly. Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
I would never have belted and I would have been a so-so soprano, I think.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women. So you are a mature lady now. And you said you're semi-retired. That was your own description. How do you keep your voice? How do you look after your voice?
I don't really think about it. I'm a bit naughty like that because it's part of me. It is me. And as I said, I open my mouth and hope for the best. I try and eat sensibly. I try to rest or whatever.
But do you do vocal exercises?
No. I've never done that. I'm famous that people laugh at me, which never warms up, never does anything. And I think, well, no, and it's so long now that it's a bit late. I do wish I did, though. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody because of these people that have singing lessons, and it's good for them. Also, maybe they don't sing like me, whatever. You know, I'm not a great example for that, and I'm not against anybody having singing lessons at all. I mean, do, by all means, because people can help you to maybe I should have done. I would sing actually better than I do. But I didn't, so that was just... And it's a bit late now to start.
Now, your career has really gone from the 60s until now, hasn't it?
Yes, because 1961 was my first West End musical, as I said, with Anthony Newley, Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. And then, of course, after that, I played the lead in Half a Sixpence opposite Tommy Steele, which was amazing. I mean, I was still a teenager. I mean, it was incredible. With Tommy Steele's first musical, I mean, it was such a big thing. And then, of course, I went off from there to do Oliver, many musicals.
You were Nancy and Oliver,
yes,
weren't
right,
you?
Yeah.
God, I'm so envious.
Yeah. And I did it first on tour, and I always say this to everybody that must know by now, that our assistant stage manager was a young man who dreamed of being a producer. Well, I think his dream came true because his name was Cameron McIntosh.
Wow.
And so that's when I first met Cameron. And then when we did it at the Piccadilly Theatre, my Fagin was Barry Humphries.
Oh, what a scream!
I know, which was wonderful, and yeah. I've known Barry ever since then. Yeah. You know, and it's lovely that you meet these people in your life, and it's just very
but
lucky.
Also, you were in the kind of 60s scene, you were in Godspell and those sort of groovy kind of musicals. 70s, sorry.
Yeah.
And that's like the groovy musicals.
I know,
so you met
the beautiful David Essex,
yeah.
too, who I still see all the time. It's
oh,
like,
my God!
You know, yeah.
Do you think the business was different then than now?
Oh, yes, it was. I mean, it's we didn't have mobile phones for a start.
Yeah.
We didn't have the internet, nothing like that. I mean,
so
it
you
was.
Had to see each other to hang out.
Well, yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I've got friends from all the shows I've done like years ago. I mean, Gloria came to see me when I was doing Tell Me on a Sunday at the Duchess Theatre, Gloria Johnson, who was in Stop the World with me. And it was lovely seeing Gloria. We were exactly the same as what we were when we were at school, and she looks amazing. And I just thought, isn't it funny? You know, and it's like when you have a good friendship, it lasts, you know. It's just one of the things. It's a quality of friendship.
Now, Don Black, who is a complete legend, I mean, he wrote the lyrics, his lyricist mostly for Diamonds Are Forever and Thunderball, and then he became your manager. How did that come about?
Well, that was when, at the dinner... having coffee, and Andrew said, well, I can sign you to the label, but Don will manage you. He said, because Don's on management. I went, all right, fine, whatever. I didn't, you know, it was like, that was that. And that's how that started. And then I only left Don when he was doing so much and he was so busy that he found it really impossible to see to me and do his work. So, and then I got another agent and sort of changed. But we've stayed friends forever.
Who in the business has been the biggest influence on you?
I think it has to be Anthony Newley. Because he was so wonderful to me when I started. He used to talk to me about life, you know, and about him, about his career and what he was like when he was young. And he always saw something in me. He thought I had something. And he didn't want me to upset it, you know, and miss my chance in the business, you know. And
well, he was a famous lyricist as well, wasn't he?
Because
he wrote The Candyman Can.
Yes,
you know, and all, lots and lots
of
musicals.
Kind of
David Bowie
yes.
was literally very, very influenced by Anthony Newley. Did
yes,
you know
another
that?
Another person I adore, yes.
Yeah, yeah, but it's incredible. You wouldn't put them together. But then when you hear things like The Laughing Gnome or his very lyrical songs, you realise that... He's actually telling a story, and Anthony Newley's the same.
Well, I always think that because Tony, I think, taught me everything I do now is because of Tony Newley, meeting him and the way he set me on my path. And I do think that, you know.
Incredible.
And he gets in touch with me too, which was lovely. And I saw him often. And he sent me a lovely note from Los Angeles when I did Tell Me on a Sunday on television. He saw it there. And he sent me this lovely note saying he was so proud to be part of my professional life. And I thought, oh, my God, no. I'm just so wonderful that I met you, that I got to know you.
So the 80s were your kind of fame peak. Can you tell me about those giddy kind of times?
Well, it was a bit silly time, really, because I was doing Evita, which I thought was quite enough to do Evita. I thought that was quite good, you know, especially because Evita was so huge. I took it over from Elaine. And, of course, when I first went in, I went while Elaine was on holiday, which was nice for a month. So I went in for the month, and then I would stay and do performance for Elaine and everything. And so it was lovely. And I knew Elaine, which was nice. It was lovely. I think she's so wonderful. I'm very proud of Elaine. She's wonderful.
Very fun as well.
Oh, yeah. She is. She is. Mm. And so I thought was enough, you know. But, of course, once Tell Me on a Sunday went out on the television, my God, and I'd just taken over full-time as Evita, it was like a madhouse there. And I used to have to go to Holland and do a television and come back and do a Vita that night and things like that. You know, it was a mad time. And also making other albums then.
Yes, because so, I suppose they wanted more and more from you.
Exactly. My second album, I always remember after the show, I went into studios to work with Lindsay DePaul, who'd written two songs for this album, who's lovely, Lynn. Yeah. And, of course, she was with James Coburn at the time, and I thought, oh, the Magnificent Seven, I can't believe I'm here with James Coburn. It's so wonderful. And, yeah, and that's what I was doing, recording during the day and at night and doing television. So my life changed so much. It really did. And it sort of continued from there, really. I was just very lucky.
Because you haven't really been out of work since then.
Well, I have. You know, I have moments when I'm out of work, of course, but please God, it's not for very long.
Also, you had cancer in 2014.
No, 2006.
Okay, sorry, 2006.
I spoke about it only in 2014. Yeah. Yes, because I didn't want to talk about when I had it. I didn't really want people to know.
Heavy, and you didn't know what was going to happen next.
Exactly, but then, and I was talking to somebody about it, and it came out. They found out about it, and they said, and I said, well, yes, I suppose I should speak for other people, you know, to talk about it, because people should talk about it, and I'm one of the lucky ones, so it shows you can survive it, you can, you know, and I'm very lucky, because my friend Linda never did, Linda Bellingham, and
so do you
really
have to take anything now, or do you have
no, I've had all my checkups and everything, they're very good, they keep you always, you know, you don't go out of the radar, you're always there, you know, they're very aware of you and everything, and I have a wonderful doctor.
And did your lifestyle change or your view of life change after that?
Yes, it did. It made me realise I can't go on forever. It was like a bit of comeuppance and sort of think, well, Marty, you might not be here next week. You've got to start thinking about this. You never do. You just live for the day and you don't think about much. And so I think I suddenly realised, you know, that maybe I could die, and which I never thought about before. I don't know why, I suppose. Happy-go-lucky sort of person, so you don't really dwell on that too much. But I think it did make me think that. I don't think it lasted very long, that's for sure, knowing me. But it does make you realise, you know, and also about other people too.
It's, yes, to appreciate them.
Yes, yeah. And you also value other things. You sudden to value things a bit different. You do feel differently, I'm sure about it. I'm sure everyone says the same.
Probably makes you live life more to the full.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you just are more aware of things and how lucky you are. You realise you're one of the lucky few, and that is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
But you do feel sorry for all the other people that are not so lucky. That's another thing, you know.
Well, it makes you aware, like you say, which awareness is a good thing.
It is, because then people are noticing things. I mean, all these campaigns they have on television, some of them are very heartrending and they're a bit hard for people. I think, no, it's great that people know about these things now. It's all like, no, we don't talk about that.
Yes,
we don't talk.
Yes.
And because of the age I am and the way I was brought up, we didn't talk about things like that.
Don't
talk about things like, no, it's definitely not.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing now that it is, but it's good because it helps people.
Yeah.
And people don't feel so embarrassed about things. They're willing to talk,
exactly.
Which is great.
RadioGorgeous.com.
You've sold your flat in London and you're now living in Somerset full time. Do you love the country?
Yeah, I've always loved the country. I think it's because I'm a Londoner.
Yeah, I was going to say you weren't brought up.
So, you know, I was brought up in London always. And I think anyone who lives in London, lives in a city or a town, everything, always wants to go to the countryside. I don't know why, but you do. Because
that really is the country, isn't it?
Well, it is. But it still has cities and towns in it.
Do you have animals?
No, I don't. Not anymore. I lost my little cat the year after I had my hands, actually.
Oh.
And I'd had her for 20 years, bless her. And then, so no, I don't.
So what do you do then? I'm dying to tell me
what
a normal.
Do?
What do you do
I
in the
exist,
day?
Yeah, I
what
exist.
Do you do? What do you do? Go for walks?
Well, yes and no, but
go
I,
to yoga?
I have wonderful neighbours. I have wonderful neighbours who I see, and we go out on our little way days. We go off, go to play, go and look around the shops and things like that. But, I mean, I have my house to see to and everything, and I have my friends. I go and see my friends. I mean, it's nice for me to come up to London because this is what I do. I often just drive up for the night, come and see people.
Wow.
I'm going to Crazy Cots to see Lillianne Montevecchi. And I'll just come up for the day, go and see her, and then go home again.
Fabulous,
you know, because it's not the Outer Hebrides.
Yeah,
nothing wrong
with
the Outer Hebrides, but, I mean, it's not so far to go, Somerset.
Yeah.
It's not really that far.
Right. So it is away from it all, but you can get back to town quickly.
Yes, and I have my cousin who lives in Fulham who I stay with when I'm in London, which is great. And I also have other friends that I could stay with too if I needed to. So it's fine. I don't miss it the same. I thought I would. I thought I'd be really bad. But because I'm always here, I'm always coming up. And so, you know, it's like funny. So you've never really left. I don't think you do, actually. Once you're a Londoner, I think you're always a Londoner, really.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Ben, the two of us need look no more. what we were looking for. With a friend to call my own, I'll never be alone. And you, my friend, will see you've got a friend in me. Then you're always running here and there. You feel you're not wanted anywhere. If you ever look behind and don't like what you find, there's something you should know. You've got a place to go. A friend's apartment, I'd like to choose how I hear the news. Take me to a park that's covered with trees. Tell me on a Sunday, please. Let me down. No big solemn dance, no long faces, no long looks, no deep conversation. I know the way we should spend that day. Take me to a zoo that's got chimpanzees. Tell me on a Sunday, please. Don't want to know to blame, it won't help. No, don't want to fight day and night. Bad enough you're going. Don't leave in silence with no word at all. Don't get drunk and slam the door. That's no way to end this. I know how I want you to say
Radio Gorgeous.